Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insight and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office on 0114 285 9500 or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 10th of June 2016. My name is Jamie Veitch. I'm your presenter for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We're broadcasting live on 93.2 FM and from sheffieldlive.org. This programme will also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. Talking about podcasts, last week's programme featured Dr. Heather Anson of Digital Law UK, but Heather was talking about tax avoidance, offshoring, and about the American race for the political nominations for president. So if you missed that fascinating stuff, then you can find it on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website. All you need to do is go to sheffieldlive.org, look up radio shows, then find Business Live, and then you can find the programme from the 3rd of June. Whilst you're there, though, you can enjoy a whole wealth of exciting music and much, much more. Discover some new sounds. I have, you can too. So today's programme, we're talking with Andrew Mills. Andrew runs Data Mills, and Andrew is going to enlighten us about cybersecurity. Before we speak with Andrew, time to catch up with what's going on in business and social enterprise. And BIS, the Department for Business Innovation and Skills, have published their latest annual small business survey. They found that almost a quarter of small business owners had more employees working for them in 2015 than in 2014. 15,000 small and medium-sized firms took place in the Small Business Survey 2015, and it also revealed that only 1 in 10 employers reduced staff numbers in 2015. 8 out of 10 firms that had applied for finance received all or some of what they applied for, and 49% of respondents highlighted competition as the main obstacle to the success of their businesses. Taxation and late payment have been flagged as issues affecting small business owners too. Further details are available on the gov.uk website. If you go to gov.uk/government/news, you'll be able to find the small business survey there. It's been a year of milestones for local and renewable energy. The UK's first council solar energy bond in Swindon reached its investment target at the end of May. That was a month ahead of schedule. Meanwhile, last week's Renewables Global Status Report has found that worldwide energy capacity additions from renewable energy have smashed records in 2015. And in May, Portugal covered its entire electricity consumption through solar, wind and hydropower for 4 days during the month, and Germany announced that clean energy had powered almost all of its electricity on the 15th of May. I've just investigated this in a piece for the Environment Journal, and you can read more about that at environmentjournal.online. A watchdog is launching an inquiry into plans to close the Department for Business Innovation and Skills Sheffield office. It's been announced that the move will mean that 250 jobs in the area would be cut, as the government wants to save around £350 million by 2020. The National Audit Office is now saying they will investigate the controversial plans in a value for money study, according to reports on the BBC. And Mark Sawatka, who is the General Secretary of the Public and Commercial Services Union, said that this is a shameful decision, the closure, and that it flies in the face of what the government claims they want for the North. He says that as a northern powerhouse city, ministers should be investing in jobs in Sheffield. a star-studded lineup of Oscar winners, TV legends, and sporting icons are set to make this year's Sheffield Dockfest the best ever, according to organisers. Guest speakers will range from Sir Richard Attenborough, the well-known wildlife broadcaster, Academy Award winners, including actress Tilda Swinton, and snooker legend Ronnie O'Sullivan. Michael Moore, who's famed for his documentary Bowling for Columbine, about the high school massacre and challenging American gun law, starts the six-day festival today. He's going to talk about his latest work, including his film Where to Invade Next. And his speech will be transmitted live by satellite to over 100 cinemas nationwide. Also at the festival will be absolutely fabulous TV star Joanna Lumley, now involved in many documentaries, Kez director Ken Loach, Louis Theroux, documentary maker and star, Lord David Putnam, Reggie Yates, the presenter and Doctor Who actor, and Freddie Flintoff, the cricket legend. Mark Herbert, who runs Sheffield-based production company Warp Films and went on to produce Four Lions and TV comedy Phoenix Knight, is going to be another highlight guest speaker. And DocFest is going to showcase the world's best new documentaries with workshops, with talks, and a meeting place for filmmakers. About 30,000 film fans, 27,000 members of the public are likely to attend, and the festival is going to screen 160 international and UK documentaries. Now, many tickets have sold out, but you can take a look at what is available in the programme of interactive media, virtual reality in exhibitions, talks and film screenings at the DocFest website. Full details, sheffielddocfest.com. The UK Steel Y Accelerator is looking for candidates for its next programme. On offer is what they call an amazing opportunity to benefit from 3 months of intensive development support and a chance to win £25,000 of equity investment from a UK Steel enterprise. The programme starts in September 2016. It's built around modern business modelling techniques with access to expert advice, specialist workshops, mentors, market research and one-to-one support. It concludes with an investor pitch event with a chance to win the £25,000 investment prize. So if you've got an innovative idea and you want to build a high-growth, scalable business in the Sheffield City region, then you can apply to the programme, whether you're an individual, a team or a company with a new business idea. All you need to do is apply through the Sheffield City Region Growth Hub portal, and you've got until the 30th of June to do so. Details at scrgrowthhub.co.uk. And as I said, the deadline is the 30th of June, so find out more now. The Federation for Small Businesses Teenage Market rolls into Sheffield this weekend with an event planned to take place in the Peace Gardens on Saturday, opening at 10 a.m, being opened by local MP Louise Hay. 4,000 people turned out for the Federation of Small Businesses' recent teenage market in Beverley. The FSB spokesperson Ben Wright said they're hoping for at least double that in Sheffield. He said, "We urge local people to come down to the Peace Gardens early, experience great free entertainment and browse the stalls, whose offers are completely the work of local young people." This weekend, of course, it's also Peace in the Park, taking place on Saturday at the Ponderosa. So after a year off to save up funds, the mighty festival is returning to the Ponderosa, and they have a fantastic lineup for the main stage, acoustic stages and other stages, including bands such as Steel City Rhythm, Smiling Ivy, Bison, Mango Rescue Team and many, many more. Go along, it's free, it's a fantastic festival. It's tomorrow, it's at the Ponderosa, and if you want to find out more about it, go to peaceinthepark.org.uk. So if you've got any views on what's going on in business, in social enterprise, in community events, much, much more. We're keen to hear from you. You can get in touch with this programme and with Sheffield Live by email. Email Jamie at sheffieldlive.org. Text me 07904 272 200. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter at Sheffield Live. I'm on Twitter as well, Jamie Veitch. Whether you're starting, whether you're running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer or an employee, we're keen to hear from you. So let's turn now to our guest for today. And I'm joined in the studio by Andrew Mills of Data Mills. Andrew, good morning.
Good morning, Jamie.
Thanks very much for coming in today.
Pleasure.
You've had an early start. You have a Friday morning networking event.
I do. Yes, it's something I've been involved in for about 8 years. It's a meetup at Medahead. It's under the title of Business Networking International, or BNI. But again, putting that aside, you generally tend to use it as a business breakfast group. There's about 28 of us in the group, all very diverse, but there to support each other.
And you come down straight from there?
Straight into here this morning. So I've been up there since about 6 o'clock this morning. So, yeah.
Good stuff. Well, you're looking chipper, looking very bright.
3:30 in the afternoon, I won't be.
So first of all, Andrew, tell us about Data Mills. I know you founded the company in 2007, but what are your specialities? What are your expertise?
Started in 2007, the year of the floods, as many people recall.
I certainly
do. I was working at home at the time, so it wasn't too much of a problem, only when you had to go and see a client needed a boat as opposed to a car. But apart from that, the company's grown over time. There's now sort of seven of us, and in doing so, we're focusing around security. Because I was getting to the point where I was getting a little bit sick of the big companies like the Googles, the Microsofts, the Apples and all the others changing the way that they were working, and we just had to jump. So I thought, okay, what in the IT sector doesn't change? And people, data or information, and threats. So on those grounds, started to focus around the security side or the information security of businesses. Because again, it's amazing how many companies just don't think about that. They have company advisors who come along, tell them that you can use this great bit of software that'll do everything, but don't realise they need to run it on a strong and secure infrastructure.
Indeed.
And that's where we can go in and talk to them and advise them on there. So we went into one company, they had about 14 computers. They got three lots of free antivirus software. And there was a warning on the screen, and the woman just kept clicking ignore and carried on working.
Yes.
And it's just a time bomb waiting to happen, really.
Well, I'm sure that many people are actually listening, thinking, yes, I do that. So
yeah, it's busy people.
Yeah.
And I think when people are busy, they're just wanting to drive the business forward at a rate of knots. They're watching the financial figures on the balance sheet. They don't think about the security of that information and the trust that needs to be in place.
So you founded the business in 2007.
Yep.
Talked about the focus. You've been running now then for 9 years,
mm-hmm.
and you've grown to a business of seven people. So you've grown the business, but you've kept it at a level that obviously you want it to be. What kind of clients then do you work with?
Right. Okay. Well, the sort of the scope of the company is very broad.
Yes.
We've been involved in sort of charities at one level,
yeah.
Be it just a one person in a back bedroom with their type of charity, right through to nationals. On the other level, we've also then been involved in some national businesses, right down to, again, the smaller firms. So again, mainly business related, mainly business focused, but again, with quite a wide spread. Where I'd like to get the business is probably working more in the engineering sector. Obviously, Sheffield's famous for its engineering sector. But again, they're quite often well behind the curve when it comes to technology.
Is that right?
A lot of them are still the old little, I won't say the little mister because they've moved on to that. But again, people with a lathe, with a milling machine, and they're very good craftspeople. They're very good, high-quality businesses, but they don't use the technology moving forward. And a lot of the modern businesses are starting to use the technology where before you'd prototype something by taking a lump of something and whittling away at it to get your new little widget. A lot of the new companies, in conjunction with Sheffield Hallam University, are starting to look at digital printing.
Yes, of course.
Where they're sort of layering up the layers of material to build a prototype. So instead of taking away, they're just adding. So they're only using the material that they need to use. So again, it's trying to help companies to sort of think outside of the traditional framework.
I see.
So yeah, that's one of the areas I'd like to start working more in. But
indeed,
we do have a broad section.
So pretty broad there, and that's really interesting. Thinking about the particular needs and the situation in which manufacturing and engineering companies find themselves. Some of them you're talking about there. Now, over the 9 years that you've been running the business, cybersecurity must have evolved considerably.
Ooh, but unbelievably.
The threats must have evolved considerably too, and you must sometimes feel that you're always, well, it would probably be unfair to say you're always playing catch up, but I suppose that the industry as a whole is always having to look to the next threat and the next threat and the next threat as new threats come in.
Yeah, and you don't even know where these threats are going to come from. When we first started the business, the whole terminology of cloud computing was a sort of a distant thing, and everything was very traditional. It was a desktop computer. Laptops were only used for executives, where these days laptops are used more commonly, tablets, mobiles. And again, mobile phones, when they first started out back in 2007, predominantly were very simple things that would make a call, have a text, and then people wanted emails, and then it moved on to people then wanting a calendar, and then wanted multiple calendars. Now people are wanting documents on their phones. So the whole way of working, instead of being an office-based environment, people are now moving into very much a mobile environment, being able to work
cloud,
and things.
And this bring your own device to work.
Yes.
Must have significant significant implications. I can't get the words out today. for security, if people are bringing their own device and expect to be able to log into their company's own infrastructure.
Yeah, and I think you sort of highlight the fact of the infrastructure changing. Going back to the old school, it was very much an office environment. There may have been a server in the corner. That's where the documents were kept. People had desktop computers that logged into that central box. But the perimeter for the security really was that room.
Yes.
So you'd lock the door, put the security cameras on, turn the computers off. There was the one box sat on in the corner, and that was it. So the perimeter for security was easier to protect.
Indeed.
And then obviously, as things have moved into cloud, where those documents have now been taken off those boxes and put into some Google Drive system or a Dropbox system or Microsoft 365 or other equivalents, it means that, yes, it's got greater flexibility and greater access, but also, therefore, that boundary now becomes very fuzzy and it's very hard to police that. And what's happening now is a lot of the cloud applications as well are actually joining together in the cloud.
Yes.
So therefore, there's all this cross-linking going between different data centres around the world. And as a business owner, you are still responsible for your data.
Yes. I mean, there are significant legal implications with regards to this data and where it's stored as well. And even in terms of what's allowed, whether your data is at risk or not, where you store the data. I mean, we've had Peter Wright from Digital Law UK talk about this on the programme as well in the past. But this linking between, I suppose, APIs and links between different software as a service and different providers. There only needs to be one vulnerability for the system to
and this is where the cybercrime has really got a better handle on things. You just mentioned software as a service. Obviously, that's where you're buying a subscription to a system, yeah, and you're paying for it's a small cost on a monthly basis, and you've got access to a wide array of services, which is great. But that's also what's happening in the cyber world as well, where before the cyber criminal would actually have to build their own infrastructure with their own servers, very costly. It meant that they needed to attack big companies to get there, to make the payoff worth it. That's the old school way of working. What's happening now is you've got software as a service. You can also have infrastructure as a service.
Yes.
You can go to a data center. You can rent a server for a month, pay pennies in some cases, pay pounds, whatever. But realistically, they build an infrastructure which is just on tap. They can turn it on and turn it off as quick as anything. Also on the back of that, the other is the dark side of the web. Now, some people may not have heard of it, but it's called Tor. It started out by the Americans trying to do their secret agents in the field communicating with them. It's been exploited by the criminal element. No surprises. So in doing so, there's a dark side of the web. And it's on this dark side of the web where a lot of the transactions go off, where you'd be surprised, but there are job boards out there where people can recruit someone to write a cyber attack.
Yes.
There are things out there where people, there are non-traceable currencies, or Bitcoin being one of the more famous. There is also a thing called the Silk Road and other things like it, where you can actually just go in and buy illegal products, services.
Yes.
And because of all of this, it makes the cost of things a lot cheaper. And because things are a lot cheaper, it means that they can hit smaller targets on a greater number, charge a ransom fee, and in doing so, make their money off the back of that.
So what we're hearing about, say, the sharing economy with the rise in things like Airbnb, Uber and so on, and the exchange of time and services for money being helped by new technology, but also that has implications for traditional jobs in the legitimate economy. Now, this is having an impact, if you like, then on crime and the criminal economy too, meaning the cost for entry and the cost for the cost for carrying out crime is fallen.
Yes, absolutely. And again, in the same way as you can use the technology in a legitimate way for a business to give it a competitive edge, the same's happening in the cybercrime world.
Yeah.
And because of this, it is about risk. And where, say, 10, 15, 20 years ago, the internet was an okay place to be. There was a degree of trust in there. What's happening now is that trust level isn't the same with the internet. You've got to be suspicious of emails coming in. You've got to be suspicious of web links and clicking on them. You've got to be suspicious of... But at the same time, with the way that the speed of industry is going, or the speed of the economy and everything else, people are having to use the internet, or actually forced to use the internet. I know the HMRC are actually wanting to go fully digital by 2020.
Indeed.
So in doing so, you've sort of got your arm up your back, sort of saying you will use the internet, you will do things, electronic submissions, and in doing so, if not, you'll have a fine. But at the same time, it's a dangerous place to be.
And we all, I suppose, have a tendency of thinking, oh, well, that won't happen to me. I wouldn't fall for an email pretending to be from my bank, or I wouldn't fall for an email pretending to be from HMRC or whatever. Only silly people fall for that. But this is actually not the case.
It's certainly not the case. And we've certainly seen that with local businesses. We came across a company, well, this is the first time we came across the crypto style attack. It was about 3 years ago, and it sort of radically changed the way that we did our business, from trying to be reactive and just sitting in the wings waiting to support people, to being more proactive.
Right.
And what this particular company, he'd received what appeared to be a remittance advice from the HSBC bank. He was being paid by another company on a regular basis from the HSBC, so he didn't think of it as being an issue. Opened it up, nothing happened, carried on working. A couple of days later, a big ransom box appears on his screen. It's sort of saying you've got 72 hours, you've got to pay $300 in Bitcoin. And in doing so, all of his files were lost. That's 6 years' worth of data.
And it was all encrypted.
Now, he called us and said, what's this? And we went, sorry, we've never heard of this. We don't know. So he took his computer down to Sheffield University, to the forensic crime lot. They looked at it and said, we've never seen anything like this either. One of the reference sites that we go to find out what viruses are and everything else had got one page on this subject. 3 days later, there was 99 pages on this subject.
Right,
so. But in doing so, the advice he was received from the university was very much format your hard drives and start from scratch.
Ah.
So, yeah, that's what we first came across on the cybercrime side of things. And from there, it's a lot of the time it is very much coming in via email. And it's people being aware of these things. But I said it's the speed of life, the speed of business, which is causing people to be probably a bit lackadaisical, to be quite honest.
And you mentioned another example when we were just outside the studio of someone receiving an email that appeared to come from a colleague.
Yes, this gentleman was the head of finance and administration at a national charity, and his boss, CEO, had actually sent him an email saying, we need to transfer some funds to another account, rather sharpish, can you get things ready? So he did. He got the chequebook out, and, well, I don't know if it was chequebook, but again, he got everything ready, but the CEO had to come in and sort of authorise the payment. Well, the CEO came through and said, what are you doing? He said, well, you sent me this email and you've asked me to transfer this money. No, I haven't. Fortunately, they were in the same office. The only thing that stopped him making that payment was the fact that their account system required a double signature or a double authorisation. He's had that email twice this year.
Good grief.
First time, obviously, he nearly fell for it. Yes. Second time, he went, ooh. But it was all spoofed. It looked like it came from the company, had the right footer, had the right address, had the right logo. And again, that type of attack is called a spearfishing attack.
So how can we protect ourselves from spearfish attacks and from falling for them?
Well, this is where it becomes more of a challenge. In many ways, again, vigilance is one thing. Common sense is another. You've got to ask yourself, is these type of things out of character of people? Because at the end of the day, you can throw technical answers to all of these problems, but the thing that's all about is the person who sat in the chair. All these attacks, all of these websites that throw things at your computer, all of these spam attacks, goodness knows what else, are all to fool the person in the chair, to click on something they shouldn't do, to open something they shouldn't do, to take some action they're not supposed to. So on one hand, as a business, you're actually told, get a social media account, get yourself out there, tell the world what you're doing. You're actually giving the cyber criminal sort of material to use against you.
Yes, quite.
So yeah. There's a degree of common sense that you need to use with regards to using social media, for instance, or what information that you're putting out. Because, I mean, if you're sort of working on a particular sensitive job with a particular client, and then you're putting it out on social media, sort of saying, oh, we're working at so-and-so, well, yeah, it sort of answers itself in some respects. Be careful about it. But again, it comes back down to training. So again, the terminology I tend to use is the accidental technician. The accidental technician is the person in the company who can sort out the email signatures, who knows how to format Word and Excel. They could probably unjam the photocopier as well, and they can certainly sort out the printer, which obviously means that they're the company's cyber security and IT consultant and expert.
By default. Yes.
Exactly. And quite often, a lot of the managements within organisations will just go, oh, they're young, they know how to do that bit, they can sort the computers out. And it's the sort of, my mate has helped me set this up. They don't know what the world is like out there. I mean, if you look at some of the facts and figures over the last 2 to 3 years, literally every year, the cyber risk to businesses is nearly doubling.
Yes.
From 2013, 2014, 2015, and even in the first quarter of this year, it was double on what it was in 2015. And the businesses are just not wearing it. They just go, well, it's not happened to me for the last 12 years, so therefore, why is it a problem? And I suppose the analogy I would use is, it's like, well, I'm in my 40s, I've not been run over by a car, so therefore, it's not a problem. But the roads are getting busier. As they get busier, the threat is greater. Also, it depends on where I cross the road. If I cross the road in a small village, okay, the likelihood of that is a lot less than trying to cross the M1
if I'm trying
to go to Rotherham. But at the end of the day, it's the same with the business side of things. The threat is getting worse. People just go, it's not happened to me, so therefore, why is it a problem? And in reality, these things are going to happen if they don't take some practical steps.
So you don't want this to happen to you if you're running a business. Now, lots of businesses are micro enterprises, small enterprises, mm-hmm. one-person businesses or businesses with five or fewer employees. So as you've talked about, Andrew, quite often, either the business owner kind of tries to figure it out themselves, or someone in their business has the sort of responsibility thrust upon them by default. But actually, really, people should be accessing expertise. Now, perhaps sometimes people are scared of doing it. They think it won't happen to them. They think it only happens to people who are really careless. But actually, clearly, as you've illustrated, that's not the case. Now, I know you run a sort of cafe-style event where people can pick your brains. And we'll mention that so that people can come along in a moment or two. But but you gave a really good tip there in terms of emails that are, well, spearfish attempts, where an email masquerading to be someone else, but is this request to send money out of character or whatever. Now, what other tips, what other advice, what other suggestions would you make to small business owners?
Okay, well, again, there's the sort of the wider spam attacks.
Yeah.
The ones, I mean, we run an email, a spam protection system. And when we were looking at the back end, at the front end of 2015, the spam level going through our system was about 30% of all the mail going through it was spam. When it came to Christmas, that was up to 85% of everything that we were dealing with. And most of the stuff that were coming through were about deliveries. It was near Christmas. People were ordering online from Amazon, wherever. And there were sort of, there was emails going out from FedEx, from all the other major carriers. And again, it was just trying to get that person at the wrong time in the wrong place just to click on and think, oh, yes, I've ordered something from Amazon. It must be FedEx. Yeah, I need to just follow this link to see where it's got to. Now, we saw one of those. And when you looked very carefully at the email address, it said FedEx. But when you actually noticed where it came from FeedEx.
Yes.
F-E-E-D, as opposed to FedEx.
Yeah.
So there are sort of telltale signs if you are prepared to sort of sit and look carefully for them. And again, the speed of life tends to people just go, oh, it's FedEx, click on that and off we go. Bingo, they've got something.
And you talked about people clicking on something that they've been sent purporting to be a remittance advice formatted correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But by clicking on that file, has unlocked a crypto locking.
Well, yeah, it starts off by getting a what they call a Trojan or a dropper or a downloader onto the machine. That in itself doesn't really do the damage. What that does, it then calls back out to where it came from, reports the vulnerabilities of the machine, and then the cyber criminal at the other end will then throw the attack at the vulnerability or the weaknesses in those machines.
I see. Yeah.
So on those grounds, there are things like making sure that your computer is up to date with the latest security software.
Yeah.
So yes, there's the traditional antivirus software. Free versions, they have their place, but not in the business world. Reason for that is it's not the fact that these companies are just trying to make money out of the businesses as opposed to residentials, but realistically, if there is a new virus that gets detected, the antivirus company has to sort of pick that up. They then need to write an antidote for it, and then it has to be distributed. Now, if you're on the pay-for version, that cycle is a lot quicker. It can be up to 3 days if you're on the free version.
Okay. So.
And so, therefore, you've got these things called a zero-day attack. And this is what happened to this guy originally, where there was one page of information, 99 pages later, it was a zero-day attack. No one knew what it was, but he happened to have just stumbled across it at the wrong time in the wrong place, and it had hit him. So on those grounds, yeah, partly is to get the right antivirus running on a machine. But again, it's not you can't just run with that these days. There's got to be a multiple-layered approach. It's like having a single pane of glass and going, I've got Windows, it's fine. But realistically, these days, you need to be looking at bulletproof glass with multiple layers of security. So part of it is the person in the chair. Train them up. Get your staff to understand what the real world threats are. And this is why we've taken it from being in the business. Because if I go to a company to talk about business security and go, this is what's happening, buy our security product, you sort of say, yeah, you're only just trying to scare me. Mm. We've taken the education part out of the business to do it as a knowledge share. As a live forum. Yeah, and this is what we do with Digital Cafe.
Yeah.
So we had one which ran yesterday. We'd run it at the UMIC Centre down near Bramall Lane, down near J. James.
So the UMIC Centre, for anyone who hasn't been there, funnily enough, I went there about 3 or 4 weeks ago to a social enterprise event, and the UMIC Centre itself is a social enterprise as well, and it's also closely aligned with Football Unites Racism Divides as well.
Yeah.
Fantastic community business. So that's where you run your event.
Yeah, on the second and the fourth Thursday of each month, from about 10 o'clock through till about 12.
And are they free or is there a charge?
Yeah, we just sort of charge a donation on the door just to cover room hire and coffee, of a fiver. But again, we've got sort of four subjects that we tend to roll. So we've got sort of planning a social media strategy, because again, we find that a lot of small businesses, they have a social media account, they don't know what to do with it.
Yes, quite.
So again, it's just...
We see that a lot.
Again, working together as a team, about collaborative team working, because again, this is, again, the business is trying to get the competitive edge with each other, and obviously people are not always working in the same office, so how do you bring that together? And then we've got a website strategy thing, but again, the important one, I suppose, is the business security, the information security of the business, and taking that seriously.
And can people find out more about those online?
Is there where we have them listed is www.cleandata.eventbrite.com, so any ones that are in the future, they can just book on straight on through that.
Superb, great. Well, you listen to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, and sheffieldlive.org, of course, where we broadcast through the internet across the world. This show will also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. My name is Jamie Veitch, and my guest today is Andrew Mills of Data Mills. Now, Andrew's been enlightening us about cyber security and cyber crime. We're going to take a quick break for a quick track of music, and then return to the subject in a few minutes. So I think we'll play a track by Will.i.am. This is Geekin'.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. That was Will.i.am, Geekin'. And our guest today on the programme is Andrew Mills of Data Mills. Andrew has been enlightening us about cybersecurity, cyber crime, and some horrific examples of vulnerabilities for businesses, how to protect yourselves. If you've only just tuned in and you've missed the first half of the show, don't panic, because you can listen via podcast. Sheffield Live website, sheffieldlive.org. Go to radio shows, find Business Live, and then you'll be able to download today's show, Friday the 10th of June, from about 11 a.m. today. Now, Andrew, welcome back.
Hello. Yep.
So we were talking about cybercrime. Now, you and I have just also been talking about data and how absolutely vital, of course, data is to businesses.
Well, backups are obviously key to a company. If you get an attack, something happens, what are you going to do? You're going to go back to your data. I came across a company once that was sort of backing up data. They were taking the report, they were filing it away, they were following the procedure, and when something went wrong, they went back to it and couldn't restore it. When they actually looked at the reports, it said backup failure. As backing up is one thing, restoring is another.
Yes.
So firstly, make sure that people check their backups.
So,
and people sometimes think that systems like Dropbox are a backup system.
Uh-huh.
They're not.
No.
They're a file share system.
With many vulnerabilities, as we've talked about on this show as well, with other guests too.
Mm. Yeah. And so in doing so, a lot about the business data is to think about what worst case scenario. If someone got fire, theft, flood, these things do happen, and we said 2007, but obviously with the crypto viruses that are around and affecting businesses, I did put a call out on social media at the beginning of the week asking for anyone who'd actually suffered from this ransomware style virus, because I really would like to plot a map of local businesses where it's affected them, because again, people are just assuming it's happening to the big companies, that's what makes the headlines, it's not happening locally, it's not happening to me, I've not heard of anybody else, so therefore I must be okay. I'd love to build a map of local businesses where it has happened to go, look, this has happened to your next door neighbour just down the road, and they suffered a £20,000 effect, or a lack of trust because their client data got leaked, and things like this. But again, when it comes to actual down to the data within the company or the information in the company, sometimes it might just be one key spreadsheet that is a pivoting point for the whole company. It might be a quotes list. It might be works in progress. It might be something they use that spreadsheet to invoice from.
And that could be the vital data and the vital file.
Yeah, so I suppose the challenge would be, in some respects, is to get a big whiteboard and get your team together and go, right, okay, what is the absolute crown jewels of my company? And how do we protect that? Who has access to it? How is it? Is it? Is it just the? Is it the account system? Who has access to the account system? Is it sat on one computer in one corner?
Yes.
What happens if the computer broke? I mean, it could be that a power supply pops and they can't get access to the information. So it's not just about cybercrime. It's about the whole thing. So a lot of it's got to be joined up thinking from board level to CEOs, to directors, to operations managers, to the people on the shop floor. It's got to be a joined up thing, and it's about the person in the chair. And I think one of the biggest things I keep finding is that people just go, oh, it's cyber. Cyber means internet, cyber means technology, that means it's an IT job. It's not. IT and technology are the enabling factor for the rest of the organisation. So it's about HR.
So it's a company-wide issue.
It's a company-wide thing, yeah. And it's about companies actually having HR policies in place that back up someone doing something, because sometimes the threat's within.
Quite.
And some disgruntled member of staff decides to leak some data out onto the internet, and that happened to Morrisons. And Morrisons actually ended up with members of staff suing them for data being lost, and it turned out to be a disgruntled employee internally
who
didn't get the promotion they wanted.
So vulnerabilities there, and then other vulnerabilities would be with regards to passwords.
Passwords, yes, they're a brilliant subject. Realistically, people tend to use name of the street, name of the dog, car registration plate, anything that's memorable, which is fine to a degree. But the problem is, you see, with all these cloud-based services we talked about earlier, where the data is anywhere in the world potentially, people are only a password away from your information.
Yes, sure.
And if you've got a weak password, so the best way to think of it is like a passphrase, four random words not related to each other would be a brilliant way of doing it.
Because you will still be able to remember it, but it's not obvious, do you mean, to someone who's trying to break it. I mean, do people still use the same password for multiple sites?
Oh, absolutely.
Is that still common?
Absolutely. We had a gentleman who we knew, and his internet service was with TalkTalk. They had a hack not so long ago.
Indeed, yeah, widely publicised.
And in doing so, I got a phone call at 10 o'clock at night sort of saying, I'm getting a lot of emails coming in. What's the problem? Someone had actually compromised his email account and had been sending spam messages out. And the messages that weren't getting through to a valid address, it was the delivery failure message that he was seeing.
I see.
And
hundreds of them.
They were getting sort of at least sort of 50 a minute. So a rate of knots. But he actually admitted he used the same password across absolutely everything. Now, he had an Apple Mac computer, and people go, Apple Macs, they're secure. Realistically, any device that goes to the internet and connects to it, that can receive email, that you can web browse on, is a gateway for a cyber criminal to use.
Yes, quite. Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if it's a Linux, Windows, Android, Windows Mobile, or whatever, they all have this ability these days.
And the vulnerability isn't the fact that you're connected to this... You're connected to this worldwide network, of course, the internet. Okay, so password tips there, Andrew. Thank you. Social media as well. Social media is seen as a necessity by many businesses.
Yeah, and again, going back to the sort of spear phishing attack I mentioned earlier, if you can look at your company website, someone can pinch a logo, someone can find out the information that someone's gone on holiday, because when you send them an email, they've got an out of office sort of saying, I'm not going to be back till Monday. So you can actually craft quite a clever email sort of saying, oh, hello, David. How was your holiday? Da, 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 da. And yeah, sometimes it might just be a drip feed.
Sure.
And we've seen it with a company before now where it was £4 that was taken from their account. Then it was £40. Then it was £400. And it was only when it was £4,000 that someone actually realised that there was a problem.
Right, good grief.
So some of this thing can be a time bomb. Apparently LinkedIn in 2012 had all its passwords and usernames stolen. A lot of people don't know that. 4 years later, they turned up on the internet, on the dark side of the web, for sale.
So there's a long tail to that.
So again, changing your passwords on a regular basis, people know these are good practices, but people don't do them.
No, indeed.
There was a little video I saw recently. It was filmed in the BBC. It was a BBC News article. Someone was filming in the sports department. And on the monitor in the background of the shot, there was a sticker that said username, password. And that was on the BBC, filmed by the BBC in their own studios. So even the big guys tend to do these type of things, but we all do it for convenience, and that's part of the problem.
It's that sort of convenience and thinking that it only happens to other people and that we're not as vulnerable that makes us all actually very, very
and I suppose in some respects, at one level, level 10 would be absolute crackdown. Level 1 would be complete ease of access. Yeah. It's somewhere on that spectrum. You need to sort of wait, this is where I am, what do I need to do to go from a level 4 to a level 5?
Sure, yeah. So we've only got about 2 minutes to wrap up today. It's been a packed discussion, Andrew. Thank you very much for sharing your advice and tips. I noticed the next Yorkshire Cyber Security Cluster meeting coming up. That's in Barnsley next week, 15th of June, Digital Media Centre. Short train ride away. Are you going?
Yeah, it's something we actually joined about 2 months ago. We were involved with a big event that they did in Huddersfield about 3 weeks ago. There has been talk about trying to bring something like that down to Sheffield in sort of September, October time. But again, to raise awareness that it's not just about technical things, it's about people. So at that event, we had solicitors, we had the insurance companies, we had someone who was an antisocial engineer, sort of ethical hacking.
Yeah.
We had people who were sort of doing training on people, people who were doing ISO consultation stuff. So it's very, very broad. But again, it's just the fact that the internet is what we have to use these days.
Quite. Well, listeners who want to go along to that can still do so, because details of that are on Eventbrite. It's at the Digital Media Centre, Barnsley, next week, the 15th of June, 10:30 a.m. Just look up Yorkshire Cyber Security Cluster meeting on Eventbrite to find out. And of course, you'll be there yourself, Andrew.
So yes, I will.
People might meet you. Now, you've got your own events coming up.
We've got our own events coming up. We've got some more to list, but effectively there will be another security business information's event in July. We're going to take a break over the August period, but again, pick up in September. So there will be more stuff around that. But again, it's about the digital cafe is about getting 15 people together in a room, limiting it to that, so we can actually have a proper discussion about this stuff and share best practice with each other.
Fantastic.
So it's hints and tips, and I suppose it's a live forum in many respects.
Lovely. Okay. And of course, details for that, you've already given the a mention once.
Yeah.
But,
so it's cleandata.eventbrite.com.
Cleandata.eventbrite.com.
And also, they can check us out on our website as well at datamills.co.uk under the news section.
Excellent. Well, that's been tremendous, Andrew. Thank you very much for that. So before you go, we're talking about local independent businesses when we were outside the studio, and you mentioned how nice it would be to give a mention to a local independent you went along to. We love local independent businesses.
Yes, last night we had a lovely family meal at a place called Kia Pastoria, which is on it's on Aberdale Road up near the Woodseats Road end. Highly recommend it. That's the bottom line, I think.
So as a customer, you went and enjoyed that.
Yeah,
so.
And if I, when I came home, I did look at their Google ranking, whatever, and they've got 4.8 out of 5, which I thought was quite impressive, and I hadn't realised that till I went.
Tremendous.
But I'd certainly back that up.
Excellent. Well, thanks for that, Andrew. It's always nice to hear these things. You've been listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. Guest in the studio today has been Andrew Mills of Data Mills. You can find out more about Andrew at his website, his company website, which is datamills.co.uk. And of course, Andrew will also be at the Yorkshire Cyber Security Cluster meeting next week. So if you're going to that, you'll be able to meet him there. This programme will be back on air next Friday, and we're talking eco-housing. We were talking with John Johnson, whose Reach project is building a fantastic prototype eco house out of a recycled shipping container. And it's got national attention now. So we'll be talking with John. We'll also be looking at the potential impact of Remain or Brexit on businesses with an in-depth interview. We're not trying to tell you which way to vote, and neither will our studio guests be doing so, but simply trying to do an objective analysis of potential impact on businesses of all sizes and social enterprises. So tune in next Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for Business Live once again, but don't go away now, because next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk programme. Thank goodness it's folk, from 10 a.m. all the way through to noon. So stay tuned for that. It's a treat as ever. My name's Jamie Veitch. In the studio today also has been Sangeeta Basudev as our sound engineer. My thanks to Sangeeta, and my thanks to our guest today, Andrew Mills. And my thanks to you for listening. We're going to play out with a track of music. Now, this track has been chosen by our guest today. It is a track by the Rend Collective, and it is My Lighthouse.
We're open for business live.